Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Aparuta de sangamatasa tavaraye sodavanta bhamunjantu satang. So just beginning to just notice, observe the body, the state of mind, just paying attention. It's nothing extraordinary, just ordinary attentiveness. The body is like this, the breath is like this, the mind condition, motion, feeling, the jitta is like this. And through this simple reflectiveness, and you notice it's not stating anything about it. You know, it's not about how well or unwell you might feel, it's just a noticing, it's like this. This is a skillful use of language, because usually we depend on language. We want to know, well, how do I really feel right now? And then we start observing something, you know. So I think, do I feel peaceful or am I uncomfortable, angry, frightened or whatever? Then we look for something. It's not looking for anything but just observing. Bear attention. And the emotional mind state at this time is just as it is. It's not, you don't even have to have a name for it or define it in any way. It is the way it is. Same with the body, the breath. So this is pointing out this ability we have to open to the present rather than sitting down with a purpose, something you've got to pay attention to what Ajahn Sumedho's saying, or, you know, trying to get something or get rid of something. But say at this moment, if you don't like the way it is, that's the way it is, not liking. And so you can always win in this game, you know, in this way of contemplating. It's not about trying to get a perfect mental state or posture or peaceful mind state, but trusting yourself to just be the observer. Yeah, this is what we can do, you know. You can't always have the mind, a pleasant mind state or physical comfort or the things that we desire. But we can observe, learn from everything, always in the present, the way it is not a statement of its quality, it's just a pointing, a noticing, an attentiveness to feeling. We're feeling creatures. This is a feeling realm. This is a sense realm. And, you know, it's an incessant, ongoing experience of feeling, because from the time you're born to the time you die, you're going to be feeling something or other through the body, through the mind. And learning to trust this ability we all have. It's not special, you know, it's not like because I've been a monk for so long and practiced I can do it, where you just knew and you can't do it. That's another mind state you create, isn't it? how you see yourself in regards to the Sangha here, your position, whether you're an Anagarika, Samanera, Bhikkhu, Silindara, or lay, or just a lay person. What does that say? You know, we're special, aren't we? Because we're committed to Samana life, but lay people, it's just lay people, just. And that's sometimes how we think about ourselves, or how even monks might be thinking about you. Just a lay person. And these are thoughts that we have, or habits of defining, of separating, you know, and identifying ourselves with our position of senior, Mahatera, junior, Bhikkhu, Silindara. These are conventions, but we identify with these conventions a lot, and we always distort the present moment through this kind of blind attachment to them without knowing what we're doing. You know, we're just caught in the momentum of habit, of conditioning. Reflect on what it is, you know, this realm that we have to exist in as a form, as a human form. And that's why I keep emphasizing this is a sense realm. This is about feeling. It's not an ideal realm. It's not how everything should be according to the best perceptions we might adhere to or want, but this is about feeling, about sensation, about change. And so the more we keep informing, reminding ourselves that this is the way it is, it's not a statement of you know, there's anything wrong with it or it should be otherwise, but it is an acceptance, a knowing. And you can only find the escape from suffering by not creating suffering around the conditions of the present moment. Because this realm, this sense realm, is about suffering. We can't sustain an ideal situation or a pleasurable sensation. They come and go and change according to other conditions. And this is an ongoing, unrelenting process that we're involved in. And sensitivity means both pleasure and pain, happiness and suffering. It means love and hate, like and dislike, good and bad, true and false. It's what we want, what we don't want. This is a feeling realm. And so this is, it's opening to feeling, being aware of feeling as an object, because in awareness, when we're aware of feeling, that awareness is aware of the changingness of feeling, but the awareness itself is not caught in the feeling of the moment. It's a pure conscious moment. It's an openness from the position of knowing, of wisdom, rather than from desire and ignorance. So, like reflections on the dependent origination, paticca samuppada, avicca bhajaya sankhara. That says a lot right there. Ignorance, not understanding in this term, avicca, isn't about being illiterate or not being clever, not understanding Dhamma, not knowing reality, not having investigated or had insight into the Four Noble Truths. This is how we describe it in this particular conventional form. So it's not like ignorance as we generally use the term. We can be have PhDs in nuclear physics and so forth and still be suffering from avijja. Avijja, bhajaya sankhara. So this is like, if we always operate from avijja, from ignorance, then that affects everything in our lives from this moment on. If you operate from this sense of I am this body is me, it's mine, I am this personality, I am my thoughts, my memories, I am a good person, bad person, I'm a good meditator, I'm not very good, I'm a Buddhist, or I'm not really a Buddhist, or whatever position you're adhering to at this moment affects consciousness. Sankhara bhajaya vijnana. So you're experiencing consciousness through avijja, and through the sankharas that come through avijja. Sankharas are not the problem. It's avijja that's the problem, not understanding Dhamma. Then from that point, whether we, how long we meditate, whether we're ordained, whether they're mahateras, what we are, we're still operating from avijja bhajaya sankhara, sankhara bhajaya vijnana. So the real problem lies with avijja. And how do you deal with that? You know, how do you, if I try to get rid of avijja, you know, I think I shouldn't have avijja. I've been a monk for nearly 50 years and I shouldn't, you know, I should have wisdom. I'm operating, if I take that position, then I'm operating from avijja. That would be sakkaya ditti, the first fetter that blocks the path, that hides, that blinds us to the reality of the path or the way of non-suffering. So have more confidence in not operating from I have to practice meditation in order to get samadhi, I have to get rid of my defilements before I can become enlightened, I have to do something now to get something in the future, I've got to get rid of my weaknesses, my bad thoughts, my anger in order to become get samadhi and get enlightened. These are positions of avijja. So even in monastic life, where we've got these very valuable teachings, very direct, very wise teachings from the Buddha, we can still be blinded by clinging to the teachings, by not breaking through the basic problem, which is avijja bhajaya sankhara. Like sankhara is a generic term. It includes everything, you know. All sankharas are impermanent, anicca, dukkha, anatta. Sankharas, it's not matter whether they're big or small, macrocosmic, microcosmic, personal, impersonal, whatever, refined or coarse, they're sankharas or sankharas. They arise and they cease. And as long as we create sankharas, that's avijja, and cling to the sankharas, then that affects consciousness in the present moment, which becomes nama-rupa, divided into body and mind, salayatana, the senses. So nama-rupa, salayatana, pasavedana, these are the forms of the paticca-samuppada to reflect upon. If you start with avijja, then you can... If I'm operating from this, I've got to get samadhi, get rid of defilements. You can observe that, like I've been pointing out in the very beginning, being aware of, I've got to get something I don't have or get rid of something I have that I don't want. And you can only observe that through this awareness of it. If you keep operating from trying to become wise or enlightened or get rid of defilements, you're just going around in circles. There's no way out of that trap. It's a trap of the thinking mind, of the conditioned mind. And as long as that's operating in our, that's our basis for experiencing life, whether, you know, whoever you are, whatever your position is, you'll always end up in the same soka parite watuka tomanasa upayasa, grief, sorrow, despair, and anguish, dukkha, in other words. So avijja is the cause, is the reason why we suffer, why we create suffering around the sensitivity of the present moment. So sensitivity implies, you know, that it's not just pleasant senses. We'd like to have maybe just pleasant sensations, beautiful thoughts, and high-minded thinking, feelings, love, metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. We'd like to operate from the highest position of sankharas, the finest possible thoughts that you can imagine. But that's not the present, is it? That's not here and now. That's an ideal, a desire to have something you may not have in the present moment. That's why it's important to establish this now, here and now. The body's like this. Sitting posture. The four postures, they're all good for reflection. Sitting, standing, walking, lying down, breathing, inhaling, exhaling is like this. Then jitanupassana, saripatthana, was the state of mind, the feeling of the moment, is like this. Tamanupassana is when you start seeing it in terms of Dhamma rather than in terms of personal identities, like using the Four Noble Truths, the Paticca Samuppada. So what I'm doing now is Tamanupassana, using Paticca Samuppada. It's a conventional form, you know, but it's not for grasping. It's not something to believe or deny or have form opinions about, something to use. It's for use, it's for to help us, it's to encourage us to see the result of grasping out of ignorance, grasping sankharas out of ignorance. So this avijja is a very important word, actually, because it and that is the basis of human suffering, why we create suffering through this basic not understanding of Dhamma, not realizing, not recognizing Dhamma. Now we have these Dhamma teachings like the Four Noble Truths and the Dependent Origination. And they're not for grasping, you know, they're not to be, you know, people, you can form opinions about Four Noble Truths and Paticca Samuppada on an intellectual level. People have various ideas and interpretations. But it's not about that. It's about using something for what it's meant to be used for. My simile of the key to the prison cell, isn't it? Sometimes we, you know, have the key to open the door of the wretched cell we're stuck into, but we don't use it. We might hang it on the wall and bow to it every day and talk about, you know, how wonderful the key is, but you never use it for what it's meant to be used. So a key is not something to worship, it's something to use. And then you use it, then you find out for yourself how to open the door. Now, I found in these years of my monastic life, where I've meditated, and the whole point is to develop this awareness, develop these teachings, trying to use these teachings for, you know, dealing with the karmic tendencies, habits that I experience through this form. And that's the point, to apply it to the reality of the present moment rather than so many of us have started, I mean, most of us, all of us probably started the idea of I have a lot of faults, a lot of defilements. I've got to meditate in order to get rid of them and become something like a Sotapanna, a stream enterer, or, you know, at best, you know, if you're very ambitious, you want to become an arahant. You know, that's the ultimate, that's the top, you know, that's like getting PhD. It's the best to become an arahant. Even Sotapanna, you know, seems a bit inferior. Because the mind, thinking mind is like that. We have good, better, best, bad, worse, worst, the top and the bottom, and then the desire that comes. We want the best, we don't want the worst. We want to get to the top of the pile. We don't want to be at the bottom of the pile. We want to become a stream enterer. It's interesting, you know, both in Thailand and in the West, people talk about these four stages as if they're attainable, as if, you know, some monks have attained, some lay people have attained, well, even lay people, they think, some lay people, even lay people can attain stream entry. And so we operate from these perceptions that we hear from other monks or from how we interpret scriptures or whatever, but we're not actually getting to the source of the problem with these kind of thoughts, these kind of perceptions, this kind of grasping of sankhara. You'll just go around in circles. You'll never be sure. So it's this simple reality of awakening to the present. And of course, it's nothing you can grasp. When you try to grasp the present, I'm going to be aware now, present moment, and then you're looking for something you think is a present moment in order to grasp it. You know, that doesn't work, does it? It's frustrating. And you think, I don't know what that old monk sitting on that high seat is talking about. I've got a lot of problems, a lot of defilements, and I've got to really do something about them. I just can't sit here and say, the way it is. So the way it is isn't a kind of, you know, a kind of resignation, resigning yourself to, you know, what you're thinking. It's not about just, you know, it's the way it is kind of thing where you, it's a kind of passive statement that you might use, might think you're, that's the way, that's what I'm saying. But the way it is, it's not about just saying, well, it's the way it is, you know, life is like this. Somebody dies, your mother dies, and you're upset, and you're grieving, and say, well, that's the way everybody dies. Now that's being reasonable, isn't it? And it's the way it is. Everybody dies. You know, your mother was 120 years old. And why are you crying? You know, everybody has to die. And that's an intellectual statement, isn't it? It's not the way it is in terms of the reality of now. It's the kind of way it is in terms of all sankharas are impermanent, you know, so you can quote that. But your mother dies at 120 years old, and this is what you're feeling, is like this. And I can't tell you what you might be. You might be glad or happy or grief-stricken or, you know, whatever. But it's not a part that you should even be sad or glad or anything. It's the way it is. It's what you can know, actually, when these events happen. Loss of a loved one, disappointment, despair. These kind of events happen to all of us in our lives. It's not about just saying, well, you know, life is like this, you know, just got to accept it. That's the advice generally given, but it's not that the advice is wrong, but advice of that nature isn't about the way it is in that person who's experiencing loss, is it? You know, I never knew your 120-year-old mother. So, you know, I can say, it's the way everybody dies, you know, 120 is long enough. And it's all, I'm reasonable, I'm even right. You don't make a scene, don't, you know, you're a monk, and then you should just let go of it. You know, that's good advice. It's all right, but it's not, but the person that's grieving is like this. And then if I'm just handing out that kind of advice, I can be aware, you know, that what I'm saying might be right, but not true, true, but not right. What I'm saying is true, but is it really right? Is it going to help? Is it going to, you know, help this person that's experiencing the loss of someone that they love and that loved them? You know, if I never knew your mother, you know, I can be quite cool about the whole thing. But around my own mother, then it's something else, isn't it? Some mother I never met, but my own mother, this is what I feel. This is the mother is dead, is like this. And that knowing is—it's a knowing. It's not about, you know, we can feel guilty that we even cry or grieve, because you've got the idea that if you were really attained, if you were really mindful, you wouldn't shed a tear. You just say, "Yeah, all sankharas are impermanent," and let it go at that. But no, this is about feeling. And feeling is like this, and to know feeling, to have that perspective on feeling, is that knowing feeling is wisdom. It's pure. It's knowing. And that's where wisdom operates, from knowing. And then the karma of loss of a loved one. You feel this way, this feeling of grief, lamentation, crying is like this. And so you're not trying to get rid of it or change it, but receive it, recognize it, be patient with the results, with the present condition you're experiencing, allowing it to be what it is. And then you're with it till it, you know, you sustain that acceptance of, and awareness of it, and it ceases. You're also aware of its absence. So, like, this is how wisdom operates. You're discerning the presence and absence rather than criticizing whether, you know, you should feel anything or whether you should cry when your mother dies. Now, the Paticca Samuppada, you have the vijnana nama rupa salayatana pasa vedana. Pasa is feeling, contact. or touching. It's, and vedana, upadan. So you have this, you know, this impinging on the on your mind, on your senses, creates desire, and then out of heedlessness, not knowing Dhamma, we attach to the desire, Dhanha Upatan, and then it's about becoming, and that takes us to grief, sorrow, despair, and anguish. Now it's interesting to think, is that, you know, is if you're grieving, if you feel grief at the loss of a loved one, and awareness of the grief, you know, the grieving is a part of our humanity. It's you know, it's this is being human. We're not robots. So, you know, like a manufacturing robots, and the manufacturer dies, the robot doesn't grieve. I don't think so. You know, it's not a feeling condition. It works on, you know, on programming, on being conditioned to do things or react in certain ways. And we're very much the same. Sometimes we're merely conditioned robots. We act according to the way we react to life, according to the way we've been conditioned to it. You know, so that's why we suffer, because like a robot, when the manufacturer of the robot dies, the robot doesn't have this kind of feeling about mother and father, but we do. These are about being human, a feeling realm, a sense realm. And this whole realm is the experience of sensitivity. That's why we have senses. And so when you contemplate this, the reality of this, it seems, you know, some, I remember in the early years thinking it's hopeless because you're so bound into a physical form. You know, the reality of this present physical condition is you're feeling all the time. You know, it's not, you know, sometimes it's pleasant and a lot of the time it's not. It gets hungry. It has its functions. We have to deal with the functions and physiology, the organs of the body, to get tired, thirsty. The body is an ongoing sensitive form that we're experiencing consciousness through this form. And we let this form distort consciousness. So we operate from the conditioned realm all the time. That is, you know, wanting and not wanting. Sense pleasures, wanting all the pleasant, exciting, interesting sense pleasures, and not wanting the unpleasant ones. And being human beings, we also get ambitious, you know, like wanting to become famous or important or become, you know, Prime Minister of Great Britain or head of the UN or President of the United States. Or maybe we don't want that. We want to become famous or have lots of money. We have desires for becoming, a lot of these desires. And, or even in monastic life, a desire to attain, to achieve, to spend your time in the monastic form and feel you've actually attained something out of it. You know, have you really gotten what you were expecting in the beginning? Or are you disappointed that after all these years you haven't become a stream enterer yet? You know, these are like the desire, bhava dhanha, desire for becoming. So we not only want sense pleasures, because the mammalian realm is, you know, dogs like to have pleasant experiences. They like to have good food and feel comfortable and so forth. They have sexual desires. They have anger. They get jealous. Animal, I mean, we share these kind of conditions with the animal realm. But the human beings, we think we're better than animals. We think that we're higher. When you know, I don't know, but these days, but in my generation, you know, we didn't consider ourselves animals. That was, they were below us. God created the animals for us to eat. But it's wrong to eat another human being. My mother told me cannibalism is not allowed. So this is conditioning, isn't it? It's cultural conditioning. But, you know, why do English people love dogs so much? Dogs and cats. Why do we want pets? Because there's a lot of commonality, you know, in emotional experience, in needs, in basic needs and desires. And to go around thinking that I'm somehow much better than a dog or cat is a human identity. I'm some higher form or special form, much better than... These are thinking, isn't it? This is thinking. This is cultural. That's what I was told. You know, the part of the cultural conditioning. And then we can develop all kinds of attitudes. We can become, you know, full of compassion for all. We join the green movement, environmental, trying to save the whale, and all these things are based on a kind of intention to respect life more, maybe that higher minded. Or we might go the other way, thinking, look, they're there for us to use, to exploit. They're lower than we are, they don't really count. You know, so we can just exploit the animal realm for our own needs. We have to eat. We need protein. We have to survive. And so we can justify anything you want to justify, really, with your rational mind. But pointing out, it's not about being superior. I'm not pointing to a sense of superiority or being better than anything. I'm pointing to a reality that we have at this moment that's not personal. It's not like somehow I have it better than you have, or I have, you know, I'm superior to a dog, because then that is really, you know, creating thoughts and grasping perceptions, grasping conditions, through language, through memory, opinions and views arise around that. But I can be aware of that. And that's what the Buddha, these teachings are pointing at, this awakened attention. And this we can do. All of the human birth is considered a very fortunate one because of this. We can actually reflect on the conditioning that we're experiencing in the present moment. And then if this reflection isn't about forming judgments. It's not judgmental, it's not critical, it's just discerning. It's conditioned phenomena is like this. Whether it's subtle or coarse, good or bad, whatever it might be, whatever its quality, quantity, whatever form it takes, it is impermanent. It's anicca, it's dukkha, anatta. And in this sense, dukkha doesn't mean unsatisfactory, because conditions are always changing. So you can't sustain, keep a condition and expect it to stay in its peak form. Anatta, non-self. what is self? You know, so then you have the fetter of Sakyaditi. Now this is there are 10 fetters, and the first fetter is Sakyaditi. What does that mean? A Pali word? It's the self view. It's identity with the body, with the form we have. It's the most obvious form of Sakyaditi. Is I am this body. And then we form opinions about it. You know, we have, whether you're short or tall or male or female or black or white or young or old, I mean, we're identifying with the changing condition of our form and the cultural attitudes about it, you know, about gender, about race, about class, about age. These are all important issues at this time. Sexism, ageism, they all, you know, these are causes that we shouldn't notice the differences. They're all equal. Every, you know, it's all, and in terms of punya, they are. All conditions are impermanent and anicca dukkha anatta. But when we're caught in the identity with the condition, then that's Sakyaditti. So like nationalism and political views in Thailand, whether you're red shirt or yellow shirt, that sparks off a lot of emotions. Thai people I know that have been practicing meditation for years can really lose it when you talk about, like in Bangkok, if you talk about red shirts, some of them go absolutely crazy, condemning the red, and I suppose the opposite when you're with somebody who's a red shirt. Now this is attachment to a perception, Sakyaditti. I'm not saying taking sides, I'm just pointing out whatever side you take, you know, it's an attachment to a condition. And it is the way it is. You feel like this. And in our practice, then we're observing the way it is, not trying to discern which is the right condition to attach to, but observing condition as the attachment to condition, dhanha upadan, desire and clinging, attachment to desire, out of ignorance. Now this works in every possible way, whether you know you're in the Sangha or not, whether you're Buddhist or Christian or Muslim or whatever, problems are the same, you know, because this avicca is the cause. And once we know the cause, we can let go of the cause. But if we don't know the cause of suffering, then we can't let go of it, really. We're blaming somebody else. The cause of my suffering. And like now, I'm listening to the news reports from Israel and Gaza. Both are, you know, sides are, you know, they're blasting the hell out of Gaza, and in a righteous way, they feel justified in doing it, because the Hamas in Gaza is sending 100 rockets a day over into Israel, and so there's all these righteous feelings in the air. Nobody knows quite what to do, because who are you going to take sides with? You know, so, you know, if you might prefer one side to the other. But both are caught in the momentum of avicca, isn't it? Avicca is the real cause. It's not the Israelis or the Hamas. It's avicca, bhajaya sankhara. Once avicca operates, that's the modus operandi for the present action, then the result is like this. It's going to be suffering. Fear, anxiety, resentment, anger, rage. And of course, when you, if you, you know, and you know anything about history, it's the history of just human history is like this. It's about war, about power, about dominance, about survival. You know, it's an endless, you know, recorded history is about avijja bhajya sankhara. It's about ignorance is the cause of misery. Now, the best the world can do is kind of, let's stop and slow this down, you know, to be reasonable and humane and so forth. So we, you know, there's the forces of reason and compassion operating, Red Cross, Red Crescent organizations are busy in Gaza trying to help these people that are being slaughtered, and even they're getting killed, you know, Red Cross workers. So I mean, it's you know, and it's just the power of weaponry, and righteousness. Both sides have a righteous feeling. You know, neither side is operating from evil intention. You know, because they love to destroy and kill. They're operating from righteous indignation. Now that comes from avijja, you know, from ignorance of Dhamma. It's not, you're not aware of what you're doing. You're caught in the momentum of your cultural conditioning, your religious identities, your racial identities, your memories, the side that you prefer or that you identify with. You're caught into the momentum of that condition. And where does it take you? Where will you end up? It's always with grief, sorrow, despair, and anguish. Now notice that the sense realm is a dualistic realm. It's not, you know, it's not one, it's not universal, it's not oneness, it's about dualism. If you have heaven, you have to have hell. Good, you have to have bad. Right, you have to have wrong. True and false. Day and night, male and female. I mean, this is how conditioned phenomena is. It's about if you have one thing, you have to have its opposite. It goes along with it. Two sides of the same coin. And this dualism is always a separative thing. Like now, I'm sitting here in this high seat, and my body is here, and I see you. You're separate from me. You're sitting there. This is an observation from the conventional form of thinking and identity. You know that because the bodies are separate, we're not in the same body. We're not, you know, so we all have separate identities. Now, where is the oneness? Where is the unify? Where is the unity of this? Where are we one? And, you know, you try to think about that, you won't get anywhere. Because the thinking process is for division. Thinking is about comparing, is about separating, about dividing good from bad, right from wrong. It's about what's right, what's high, what's low, how things should be and how things shouldn't be. This is thinking. This is why thinking can't get you to enlightenment, why you can't really think yourself into enlightenment. Because thinking is a function of the mind that has its limitation. And we're very much identified with thinking, with ideas, with positions, with ideals. As Buddhists, if we attach just to Buddhism through thinking, then we feel separate from everything else. We're Theravadan Buddhists. They're Mahayana. That's a discrimination, isn't it? Then we can unite as Buddhists when we go and meet the Christians. They're Christian and we're Buddhists. So we have a sense of oneness as Buddhists, but we can also divide as Buddhists when we think about Mahayana, Hinayana, Vajrayana, British Buddhism, modern Buddhism, old-fashioned Buddhism, Thai forest tradition, Wat Ban, Wat Pa, forest monastery, village monastery, Thammayut Mahanikai. I mean, these are conventional forms, and they're not saying there's anything wrong with it, but its function is very limited. And to be aware of the limitation of attachment to thought is what we're, you know, what I'm trying to point to, the ability to be aware, awake to the nature of conditioned phenomena. All sankharas are impermanent. In that awareness, then we're one. That is like the gate, the door to the deathless, when I chanted that Pali phrase, aparuta desang amatasa taura, the gate to the deathless is open. Deathless is not, you know, they have to use, deathless, non-dying, because you can't conceive that. You can't conceive deathlessness. The teaching that I used to use a lot here, we even chanted it, there's the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned. Try to imagine the unborn. Try to form an image, like an imagination is being able to create an image. You know, a conditioned phenomenon, you can create anything. Big or small, blue or green, red, yellow, beautiful, ugly, geometrical, abstract, whatever. It always is a form and a definition, a quality, a quantity. But the unborn, uncreated, I can't imagine it. Imagination stops, thinking stops. But there's also awareness of non-thinking, like in many things I've talked about over the years, about the way to observe non-thinking is to observe just try to imagine the unconditioned. And when I do that, I can't think of anything. But there's an awareness of non-thinking. And some people don't like that, non-thinking. I mean, because it's something that you know, we're not prepared for emotionally. We're prepared for anything, you know, emotional. We can deal with praise and blame, success and failure in some way or another. But the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned, emotionally, is nowhere. Nothing. And then if I'm still operating from avijja, then I don't like that. Because my personality, my cultural conditioning, it's all about reality is defined, has definitions. It's, you know, we know what reality is because we hear, we're told by our parents, by our teachers, by the world around us, by our society, by our religion. This is right, this is wrong, this is real. Reality is what I tell you is real. But the deathless, what is that? You see, so even in using terms like unborn, uncreated, you have to use a negation of the conditions. There's a condition and then the unconditioned. And then the thinking process, because we can't imagine anything that is unconditioned, it's like annihilation. And it's fear then. It's like a black hole. It's nothing. Our lives are nothing. You know, when you die, you know, death, what is the power of that word? The English word death. You know, you don't know what happens when somebody dies. And that can be very distressing. Why are people afraid of death? Because they can, you know, dealing with pain, with old age, with the things that we can imagine and know is one thing. But what we don't know, emotionally, we're not conditioned for that, for not knowing. So, like with meditation now, with pavana, we're actually developing not knowing. Not to increase ignorance, but to develop wisdom, to allow wisdom to inform, to operate in us so we can see Dhamma rather than cultural biases, personal identities, and all the other sankharas that we're helplessly attached to, influenced by. So, like oneness, when they talk about unity, about oneness, the universe, universe implies one. Then stop thinking. And try to think about oneness, you're still caught in a perception of oneness. And then you try to, you know, I believe in oneness, so you can believe in it or not believe, but that's not the point, is it? Not to create a belief or to deny or to believe in it, but to recognize at this moment where is there unity among all of us. We're no longer interested in the definitions and the positions that each individual has here. And this is a way like investigating reality of the present moment. And then, you know, this is what mindfulness takes us to that. Mindful sati sampatanya, these Pali words, is our ability to pay attention to the present and to let go of this habitual blind attachment to sankharas, to the body, to the states of mind, emotional habits, sensory experiences that we are having. And not to get rid of them, but to let go, to no longer grasp out of ignorance. Now this is beyond definition. You can't say anything about it. Thinking, definition always implies thinking. You've got a word, a concept that you can argue about, you know. What does Dhamma really mean, you know? And we can get caught into arguments about the real meaning of Dhamma or the proper English translation of Dhamma or Dukkha. But in doing so, we're trying to, you know, get caught in just the intellectual level, the perceptual level of Buddhism, rather than the practice and the insight that comes through the practice. So then, just to encourage this, to trust yourself more to do this. I mean, it's something, you know, I can point to, but I can't make you do it. And as long as you're operating from, I've got to get something I don't have, or I've got to get rid of something I have that I don't want, you can be aware of that. And that awareness of that mind state, the awareness is not the mind state. The mind state arises and ceases. The awareness has continuity, consciousness, wisdom, the deathless reality. So I offer this as a reflection for today.